This is class one. The reading was Zechariah chapter one. And we now call upon our brother Jim Stiles.
Good morning, everyone. Appreciate you all coming out and hope that we can have some fun studies here today about Zechariah. Appreciate you inviting us out here, and it's nice to be able to be out in California, enjoy some of the warmer weather that you have. You might think it's a little cloudy and depressing here, but back home, I don't think we'd seen the thermometer go above freezing for about 2 weeks, and we left with a bunch of snow on the ground, so this is pretty nice. Yeah. Zechariah, just to give you a little background in why we're doing Zechariah, we had an ecclesial Bible class on Zechariah back probably a couple years ago. And at the time, different brethren were leading the classes. And what we found is by going to our Christadelphian reference books, sometimes a brother would get a section and do chapter 1 and look at the historical background of Zechariah back in the times of Ezra and after the return and have a look at the building of the temple. And then another brother would get chapter 2, and chapter 2 he'd start out and have a look at, well, it's all futuristic. And then a brother would do chapter 3, and then he would look at the historical application, and another brother would do chapter 4, and he would be back on the future application. And we found our poor brethren, a lot of which were younger brethren at the time, they were going back and forth between the future and the historical application because they were using different Christadelphian reference books, and nobody could like really try to figure out how it all came together. And it was a bit frustrating to myself and some of the others that were there. So we started looking back through our Christadelphian writings and looking at other sources as well and trying to understand what did this prophecy mean to those people. And that's what I'd like to center on this morning and this afternoon, is having a look at Zechariah, the message as it was delivered to the people back at those times. Not to say there is no future application. Of course there is. And that is the one we're hoping to come in our day. But what we discovered is that much of the exhortational value of this prophecy comes from looking at what did it mean to those people back then. How did it stir those people up? These were people that were frustrated. They were in the middle of trying to rebuild God's temple, and they'd been working on it now for 18 years, for 16 years or so. And as time had gone on, they got discouraged and frustrated by the people of the land. And they were getting tired. They were tired of the hard work that it involved. And they were getting stopped by the political powers that had come in and said, you can't build that temple anymore. And so there were pressures from without. There were troubles from within. There were the family pressures on the people. And there were the economic troubles they were going through as well. And so what had happened over time is the work on God's temple just went downhill and stopped. And Zechariah's prophecy, in conjunction with Haggai, stirred those people up and got everybody back to work again. And they finished it in 4 years. So as you're reading through chapter 1 and 2 and 3, try to catch the spirit of how did this stir those people up? What did this prophecy mean to those people that all of a sudden people who were discouraged and depressed and tired and worn out rose up and rose above their troubles and their problems, and they got right involved in the work of God, and they finished it in 4 years. And that was impressive to me. And this whole prophecy that we're going to look at in Zechariah 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it all came to Zechariah in one night. One night of his life, he saw all these visions. And the next day, you can imagine him going around telling everybody, you should hear what I saw last night. You should hear what God told me last night. And he walked around the community and he stirred these people up about how God was going to help them. And it was okay. They could now get going. And from this time on, God would bless them. And they were going to finish this temple and he would make sure it got done. And it really did have an impact on those people, Zechariah and Haggai working together. So when we look at the prophecy of Zechariah, we'll see it definitely has two applications. Sometimes in our writings, they refer to it as the past application and the future application. Other times, you'll see people refer to it as the short run, because it was one that happened at that time. And then there is the long-term application of Zechariah's prophecies as well. So we're going to look today mainly at the original application of how it applied to Joshua and Zerubbabel and the building of God's physical house to his temple. And I'm sure that probably in various classes you've had already, a lot of times our brethren in the writings refer to the future application to Christ's return and the building of God's spiritual house. that will happen at the return of Christ. And really, this prophecy has application to both. It's like looking at, we're doing Micah back home right now. We're looking at some of the prophecies in Zephaniah, and we find that they definitely fit the same way. It had application back then, and it has a greater application in the days to come, when, of course, Jesus Christ will return and build God's spiritual house in the kingdom age. Understanding the original application, though, is the one that really helps us in applying the future. And I found that impressive, that if we can first of all try to understand what did it mean to these people, how did it get these people stirred up and motivated, and we get that one straight, I think we're in a lot better shape to try to figure out what did this prophecy, what does it mean today? What's going to happen in the kingdom age? What does God intend to do, hopefully God willing, within the next few years in establishing the kingdom now? So if you go back and look at the returned exiles, and we just go back and give you a little history for chapter 1, we need to know some of the background for this chapter. When did this prophecy take place? And if you recall, Zechariah comes along, and he actually fits perfectly into the Old Testament in Ezra chapter 5. So we don't have any doubt about when Zechariah delivered this prophecy, because in Ezra chapter 5, it specifically tells us that they got back to working on the temple with the prophets, Zechariah and Haggai, helping them. So we know exactly when he fits in. If you just go back and pick up some of the historical times back then, Jeshua and Zerubbabel had just returned back in Ezra chapter 1, and they had started the work of rebuilding the temple. Remember, they built the altar first, then they laid the foundation of the temple, and they had spent 16 years trying to get this temple finished. A long time. And they had clear out all the rubble from the destruction that had taken place before the 70-year captivity when the last king of Judah fell, when Zedekiah fell, and they were all taken captive to Babylon. And so this comes along right at this period in Ezra chapter 1 and 2. They began rebuilding the temple in Ezra chapter 3. They worked on the foundation of the temple and got that finished. And then in Ezra chapter 5, if you recall in just some of the history that's there, it's probably not a bad idea to keep a finger in Ezra for this first class, because a lot of it, we'll try to catch up on the historical as well as looking at the prophecy of Zechariah. In Ezra chapter 5, we know that Zechariah and Haggai fit in right now, because after the work on the temple ceased, at the end of Ezra chapter 4, that's the last verse of the chapter, that the work on the house of God, which is at Jerusalem, ceased. And it was discontinued until the second year of the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. And when Brad read that chapter this morning, that's where he started out. We're now in the second year of Darius. This is when Zechariah comes in and he gives his prophecy. So this is exactly, it's nice to have a prophet where you can like fit exactly where did he come in the Old Testament. And he's right in Ezra chapter 5. And so he helped to motivate these people to finish the temple. And they got it done in about 4 years after this point. Once the temple was finished, then Ezra came back with some of the exiles in Ezra chapter 7 through 10. And Ezra brought a whole other group of people back from Babylon and brought them down. And you can see why he would do that. As soon as the temple was finished, he came back then to try to work in the temple and get all the organization of the temple, get it all organized so that they could get the temple operations up and operating at that time. And Ezra was an older fella, so he waited until the temple was finished for him to come back. And then you have, of course, in the historical connections, when you study the Ezra-Nehemiah period, we have the book of Esther in there as well. And I think you'll see in our Zechariah study how well Esther fits into this period, that God was trying to motivate the Jews. Now that they were back in the land, the king of Persia had given them permission to come back in Ezra chapter 1, and now they got the temple finished, and Ezra had brought back more of the exile. They're trying to stimulate the people to get back to Israel. Get out of Babylon. And we'll see that in Zechariah chapter 2. Get out of there because you can go home now. And God is going to work in Israel and he's going to work with the community again. And then, of course, and you fit the rest of the story together, Nehemiah finishes up with the building of the walls. So there's the historical background to these prophecies. And I didn't really give you handouts of all these things, because if you want to write them down, if you're interested in copying down the notes, just ask for a copy of the PowerPoint so you can go through them at your home and take your time and all that kind of thing. Because if we spend so much time copying down today, then sometimes we miss what's actually happening. So what I like to do is give everybody a copy of the notes, and you can get them today electronically. I'll be glad to email them to you if you want. You just email me at jimstyles10@yahoo.com, and I'll be glad to email you the whole PowerPoints, or just give you copies of the notes if you'd like. The Jeremiah's prophecies about the 70 years, when you go back and look at how the 70-year period fit in, remember, we knew that God was going to take his people out of Israel for 70 years. They thought it couldn't happen, and they kept thinking it would never occur. How could Yahweh, their God, take their people out of his land and remove them off to Babylon for captivity? But Jeremiah had been predicting the day is going to come, because of the way you're living, that he has no choice. And so Jeremiah predicted that the captivity would last 70 years. In Jeremiah 25, that after 70 years, he had said that once you go off to Babylon, after 70 years, God will punish Babylon. And in Jeremiah 29, he says after 70 years, God will bring you back to the land. And so it was very clear that the captivity was only going to last 70 years. But the problem was, when do you start the 70 years? And when you look at the historical times, you could see why that would be a problem for them, just like it is for us today. Here's a little timeline of what went on in this little period that we're into right now in Zechariah, just to see how some of these things fit together. What had happened is that the time period when they started building the temple was right here in 536. This is when they started building the temple, so this would be like Ezra chapter 1. Right here around 536, the decree came where they could go back in 538. They started working on the temple about 2 years later. It wasn't quite a full 2 years, but it was somewhere close to that. So it's around 536 when they start building the temple. And what happens is the temple isn't actually finished until all the way down here at 516. And during this period right in here, you can see that the Persian kings, we had Cyrus, and then there was his son Cambyses. And Cambyses was murdered. He was murdered, and a fake tried to take over the kingdom. When you go back into the historical periods, it's sort of intriguing to look at the political things that were going on. But it appears as though what had happened is Cambyses got murdered when he was out on a campaign, and this fella took over the kingdom. And he only lasted about 7 months. They call him the pseudo-Smerdis. He claimed to be the brother of Cambyses and tried to take over the Persian Empire. Well, within a few months, everybody realized he was a fake. And they made a deal with the captains that knew what was going on, and Darius becomes the next king. Darius Hystaspes is our king that takes over at that point. And he's the one who's in power in this time period right now in Zechariah. But what's fascinating to watch is how God had orchestrated the events during this period. When they started working on the temple, the Jews were all pumped up. They were ready to go. They were enthusiastic ecclesial builders. But as time went on through here, they started dragging their feet. Ecclesial life got discouraging. The problems of the building and all the work that was involved, their family life that was there, the adversaries that came up against them during this period right in here, during Cambyses' period right here, they started getting pressure from without. The people of the land were making them afraid. And finally, when Gomedes takes over here, the pseudo-Smerdis, what happens in the historical time period is that he is scared stiff there's going to be a rebellion in the kingdom. He's paranoid because he really isn't supposed to be the king. And so the people of the land, they write him and say, did you hear what the Jews are doing? The Jews are building their temple down there. They're getting their city all built up. And if you let this go on, they're going to rebel. They're going to rebel out of your kingdom. And he sends back word right there. And he says, that's it. Stop. No more building of this temple. And that's where you end up at the end of Ezra chapter 4. That's the historical background as to what Zechariah is working with. It's his mission now to get these people to look beyond their present troubles. Beyond the fact that they've got trouble from the people in the land, the Persian king now has just said, you can't build that temple anymore. And he's got to stir these people up. And these visions, these night visions of Zechariah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that is what got people going. Zechariah and Haggai working together with these people, convincing them that in the midst of all their troubles, God is working in your life if you'll only believe and rise above those problems and get back to work in ecclesial life in the midst of all your troubles. And in 4 years, that temple was done in the midst of all. And God just opened up doors for them as soon as they got back to work. And the angels provided pathways they never believed were possible. But they had to get back to work. And that was the job of Zechariah at this time. And it's sort of fun to look at that historical period and realize how God was orchestrating the events. And then you can see in our day and age how, look at the second application of this, how wonderful it is today, of how God is orchestrating the political events of our world. And he's going to make sure that everything comes about at the right time. We've got to be ready, though. We've got to be working in his spiritual house today, building up our ecclesias and our families, because everything's going to happen just as he predicted in the prophets, and the day of the Lord Jesus will come. So it's a fun time period in terms of the historical as well as the future applications. When you go back and look at this historical period, what had happened at this time is they had been working. It took about 20 years to get this temple done. 20 years. During Cyrus's reign, they worked for about 6 more years. Then in Cambyses' son, it was about 8 years. Gomedes, only 7 months or so. And then in the reign of Darius Sasbes here, they finished it after 6 years. And where are we now in Zechariah? Which year of Darius does Zechariah start? Which year is it? 2nd year, right? So we're only 4 years away from the end. So we're the 2nd year of Darius. So what had happened is that this Gomedes, he was the fellow who was the fake. He really wasn't supposed to be the king. But he had come in for just a moment. The angels had brought him into power right at the time when it was time to stop the work. And God had orchestrated all this because of what was going on in ecclesial life, as you'll see in Haggai really clearly, because the brethren and sisters had gotten discouraged. They had gotten frustrated. They wanted to work on their own homes. They really didn't want to work on the temple right now. They had all the reasons they could come up with about the trouble that there was in ecclesial life, the trouble that there was from without with the adversaries, the Samaritans that were causing them troubles, hiring counselors against them. And there was the pressure now from the Persian king where God actually made them stop. And so all the things were there to where the people would just say, well, it's not really time. It's not really the right time to be working. We want to wait a few years. God really doesn't intend to have that temple finished right now. And the people decided they were going to wait. That's what happens in this story. If you go back and look, just to give you a little of the background in Ezra chapter 3 as what had happened. And when they came back, Ezra brought back about 42,000 people. Joshua and Zerubbabel. Ezra doesn't come back really in this book until Ezra chapter 7. But Joshua and Zerubbabel, when they first came back from Persia, they came back with a whole group of people, 42,000 came back at that time, and they started laying the foundation of the temple. If you look at the reaction in Ezra chapter 3, you can start to see the basis for what had happened in ecclesial life. In Ezra chapter 3, the restoring of the temple starts in verse 8. And as you scan through Ezra chapter 3, the foundation of the temple was actually laid in verse 10 of Ezra chapter 3. That's when they laid the foundation of the temple. Ezra 3 and verse 10, the priests stood in their apparel, the trumpets with the Levites, the sons of Asaph, according to the ordinances of David. They sang responsively, praising and giving thanks to Yahweh, for he is good and his mercy endures forever towards Israel. And you can see the people, some were excited. They shout with a great shout as the foundation of the temple, the bottom stones were being laid and all the rubble had been cleared out. And now we have a basis to build this temple. But what happens in verse 12? That many of the priests and the Levites and the heads of the fathers' houses who were old men, look what happens right here. The old men that were there who had seen the first temple, they wept with a loud voice when the foundation of this temple was laid before their eyes. Yet many shouted aloud for joy. So what you have is a mixed community here in ecclesial life. The older people that had seen the former temple and realized how big it had been and how glorious it had been, they see this one going up and all they can think about is, wow, this isn't very good. I remember the days when things were so much better in ecclesial life and we used to do this and we used to have this temple. And they were looking back at the past and all they could think about was how it used to be better in the good old days. And the younger people of ecclesial life that were in there working and doing the digging and working on this temple, they're excited. Look at what we got done. Look at how far we've come so far. And they're all excited and they're shouting for joy and praising God for what he allowed them to do. And you get the mixed bag of ecclesial life and the trouble that was going on right here as the older ones were, in a sense, suppressing the excitement of the younger. And so you find Haggai exhorting, especially the older people of ecclesial life. You see what's going on in ecclesial life today, older brothers and sisters? Don't be discouraged. Encourage the young people. Maybe in your sight, this is nothing compared to the older days, but that's okay because this is the day of small things. And Haggai has to write those people and say, don't get depressed over this. Don't get discouraged over what you see happening in your life. It might be to you as nothing, but God's excited about it. The angels are excited about it, and this is a day of small things, and this is the best they can do today. You find Zechariah saying the same thing in Zechariah chapter 4. Who has despised the day of small things? Who is willing to do that? You might be despising it, but in Zechariah 4 he says, that may be the way you feel, but those angels up there in heaven that are working with these people right now, they are pumped up, they are excited, and they're really in great joy. They're waiting for the day in which this temple is finished and Yahweh will again choose Jerusalem. See, and that's the way they see it in heaven. And if we tend to get discouraged, brothers and sisters, by comparing today with 10 years ago, with 20 years ago, we might think that maybe things in ecclesial life, they're not as good, or our family life isn't as good. But we can't look back like that all the time in discouragement and depression. We have to realize that what God has given us today in ecclesial life, our children, our families, it's our responsibility to do the best we can right now with what we have. And the angels are excited about what we're getting done today. The Sunday schools, the CYCs, the seminar projects that are going on, because they're using those things to build God's spiritual house. And don't ever get disappointed about the day of small things, because that's not the way God and Jesus and his angels see it. When you go back and look in the historical time period right now, this little chart comes out of Ezra chapter 4. This is a period where I remember when I first looked at it, I was really surprised. Using Brother H.P. Mansfield's notes, I was reading through his stuff and found it really made a lot of sense to me as to how you fit all of this time period together. When you look at these different kings, that we may not be real familiar with these names right now today, but that's why I gave you the handout. This page is actually on the green sheet for all of you note takers, so you've got a little cheat sheet you can stick in your Bible, keep all these straight. These are their names in Ezra chapter 4. You see Cyrus, Ahasuerus, Artaxerxes, and Darius. Their actual names are right over here. When you look back in the Persian records, it's pretty clear that, and nobody really debates this, this is pretty clear stuff in history, that these are the four kings that appeared during this period. How you actually go applying Ezra 4, some of our Christadelphian writers differ on, but I really like the lineup Brother Mansfield had, and it made a lot of sense to me. When you look at what happens, if you just scan through your Bible in Ezra chapter 4, just so you can see where this is coming from, what happens after the temple begins going up, and they've laid the foundation of the temple, and the older people are a little disappointed, the younger people are shouting for joy, then the angels bring the challenge into ecclesial life. We've got this mixed community here now, and we're not all on the same page, and so now what comes up? Ezra chapter 4 and verse 1, when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the descendants of the captivity were building the temple of the Lord, they came to Zerubbabel and the heads of the fathers' houses, and they said to them, "Let us build with you, for we seek your God as you do, and we've sacrificed to him since the days of Esarhaddon, the king of Assyria, who brought us here." And you go back and look at what had happened, is that as the Jews were being removed, when the king of Assyria came in and took the northern kingdom captive, the Assyrians used to take the Jews, or anybody that they conquered, they would take the people out of their land, and they would scatter them all through their empire, and then they would take people from other areas that they had conquered, and they would scatter them as well. And so they filled up the northern kingdom, geographically, in the northern part of Israel, they filled them up with non-Jews who had come from all over the empire. And this is the background to the Samaritans in the day of Jesus. This is where they came from. And so now these people come along and they say, "Well, look, you're building this temple to your God. Well, let us help you out." And we've worshipped him too. All these 70 years while you've been gone, we worshipped him too. Now, maybe they did, but they also worshipped all their other gods as well. And they weren't really being truthful on this. Yahweh to them was just, he's just one of the gods we all worship. We have him too in our list. And so Joshua and Zerubbabel, they properly responded in verse 3, and they said, "Look it, you may do nothing with us to build a house for our God, but we alone will build to Yahweh, the God of Israel, as," and here's their justification. It's always good to have support when you go in to give your rules. They come in and say, "Look, here's the reason why. Because Yahweh, the God of Israel, as King Cyrus, king of Persia, has commanded us." And they went back to Cyrus's decree. And they read Cyrus's decree very carefully. And what Cyrus's decree said was that all of you Jews up here in Babylon, you have permission to go back, and you can build a house to your God. And Cyrus said, these people said, "Well, according to Cyrus, the ones who were supposed to build were all of us who came back, not you here that were in the land." And that's part of the reason that they used. So in verse 4, the people of the land, when they heard this out, the Samaritans, look at their response. And here's how God brings trouble into our life to try to see what are we going to do about it when frustrations come into ecclesial life. So the people of the land, these Samaritans, they tried to discourage the people of Judah. They troubled them with building. They hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, the king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. So that's what they did. And now, during this period, it was okay if the Jews worked, because the king of Persia, he didn't hinder the work at all. But during this period right here of Cambyses, what was happening during that 8 years, and really even probably at the beginning here during this 9 years of Cyrus, these adversaries were working against them. They were in there trying to bother the people. They were intimidating them. They were coming in and they were hiring folks to work against them and try and stop this building. And they were literally working against the project. And so, the brethren and sisters of that day, we had to make a decision. Are we going to go ahead with this building, or are we going to let these problems stop us? Are we going to let these frustrations of the outsiders at this point frustrate us? So now we got outsiders that are frustrating us, and we got some of the older folks who just aren't quite as excited about this project as we used to be. And as time went on, brethren and sisters, what happened during this whole period is that the building slowed down. It slowed down during the, probably it started slowing down during the 9 years up in here, and especially during the 8 years right there. And it probably got to the point where the building was about at a standstill, and the people had all the reasons why they didn't have time for ecclesial life to build God's house. And so what God does then is he raises up a fake king, brings him in for 7 months, and he stops the work on the temple, and he says, well, if that's really what you want, you can have what you want. No more temple building now. And he stopped the work. And then the people had to start making some decisions. Wow, God got their attention. Now the Persian king has now demanded that we stop. And people would start thinking, wait a minute. We know that Cyrus made this decree to come back, and we were supposed to build this temple, and now it's not working. And God's getting their attention through all of this to try to get people back to work. Get the enthusiasm stirred up again in ecclesial life. And you can just see in the historical time period here how this would have run. So verse 6 of Ezra chapter 4 gives you some of the background. In the reign of Ahasuerus, at the beginning of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. So this Ahasuerus is right here. This is Cambyses, who's the son of Cyrus. During this 8 years right there, at the beginning of that 8 years, they write an accusation against them at that time. But it didn't stop the work. They were trying to, but it didn't work. And then in the days of Artaxerxes, who is now, that's how he is referred to here, this fake king that took over, in his days, they write this long letter in Ezra chapter 4, and what you find is by the end of the letter, and they write all these things about how this is a rebellious city, and these people are going to rebel against you, and you don't want rebellions in your empire, and they write all these reasons why, you know, they should stop, and in verse 21 it says, now give the command to make these men cease, that this city may not be built until the command is given by me. And that's the response that comes back. And so they read the letter in verse 23, and the command came at that point. And look at the end of verse 23. If you were an enthusiastic builder, imagine how depressing it would have been that day to listen to the scroll read out. And here's the decree. This king, Artaxerxes here, he says that the work will stop, and by force of arms they made them cease. And thus the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem, ceased until it was discontinued until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. And then the work starts back up again. Now, you can sometimes get the feeling that the work stopped for a long time, but really it didn't. When you look at the time period here, they stopped it right at they had worked already now for about 17 years. And they stop it in the reign of Gomedes right here. He's only in there for about 7 months. And by the second year of Darius, Ezra and Nehemiah are... Zechariah and Haggai are already getting the people all stirred up to finish the work. So it only really stopped in there for a period of about 2 years entirely, and maybe not even a full 2 years at that. But that's the background then as to where Zechariah and Haggai walk in on the scene. Now, when you look at, well, why did God stop the work? You might not like what had happened. And you can see how this would occur in ecclesial life. 15 years of work had worn these people out. They'd been doing the same thing for 15 years, taking away the rubble, bringing in new stones, trying to build this, and in the midst of all the trouble that they were running into. Some of the older folks, they didn't like the new temple. They thought it wasn't near as good as what they had back in the old days of ecclesial life. Doesn't look as good, not as beautiful, just not as good a project. The adversaries back in Ezra chapter 4 had been hiring counselors against them. You look at, these are the kind of things that would have frustrated the work as to why God stopped the work. The workers wanted to spend their time on their own houses and their farms and their businesses. They didn't want to bother getting involved in seminars and ecclesial projects. They didn't have time to teach Sunday school. Nobody had time for the CYCs. They had their own lives to take care of. We had to go make some more money so that we could have more toys and more things around the house. And this is what Haggai writes them about. You've been spending all your time on your own stuff, handling your houses. And this isn't what you should have been doing during this time period. And the people were afraid of the adversaries. You know, when you look at that list of what had happened, you could see why people got discouraged in ecclesial life. It was a frustrating time to be involved in saying to folks, come on, let's go. Let's get together. Let's go back and work on that temple today. You know, and you try to stir some people up, and you maybe get a few that come today and not as many tomorrow and a few the next day, a few less. And eventually everybody was just sort of like going their own way, and only a few people were left working, and God stopped the work. And that's how he got their attention. And then he sends them the prophets. So we got to be careful in ecclesial life, brothers and sisters. Sometimes when we sit around and we complain, and we're not happy with what's going on in ecclesial life, and maybe it isn't as good as it was 20 years ago as we see it, you know, and maybe there's all these reasons why, you know, we don't think that this is good enough. We got to be careful, because sometimes God will end up giving us exactly what we want. And then he finally gets our attention. Yeah, we thought it was bad today. You think back of those, and all of a sudden he brings some new problem into our life, and we think, wow, you know, maybe it wasn't so bad after all, you know, last month or a year ago or whatever. And we got to be careful. Let's learn to give thanks for what we have, and recognize every day and look on the positive side of what he's given us, and be involved in his work, so that we won't have to keep dreaming about the good old days, and find out that those good old days maybe weren't so good. In the prophecy of Haggai, it's probably worth it just for a second of glancing at this, although today's study isn't really about Haggai. But if you just scan through Haggai chapter 1, you can probably get a feel for what Haggai does, what he contributes to all this. You find out that the people had been claiming that the time was not right. This is the wrong time to be building God's house. This was part of the excuse that they would use. As the adversaries came up and they were hiring counselors, as the king would finally come in and say, stop the work, and as the work had been deteriorating over the 15, 16 years, some of the people were just arguing out in ecclesial life, and they were saying, well, the time isn't right. Now, this isn't really the right time for the kingdom. All these things have to happen first. And, you know, you can imagine that kind of thing happening today. You can see, like, the latter-day applications to all this. But they were saying the same kind of things back then. You know, well, you know, Christ is going to come right now. This is the wrong time to build the temple. The 70 years aren't really over yet. That's the problem. We started too early. We got to wait a little bit longer, and then there'll be a better time in the future. And for right now, I've got a lot of things I'd like to get done. And that's what the people were claiming. They were saying in verse 2 that the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. And I'll show you why when you look at the time period right here. Here's the problem. Now, you can understand it from their perspective the same way we could today. If you go back and look in the historical times of our life, and we say, well, look, the Jews came back and they took their land in 1948. They had the war, you know, in the 73 war. And we always look at these time periods and say, one of these time periods is going to be the right one where that generation will not pass away until all has taken place. The problem always is, where do you start? How does it all fit in at the end? And they had the same problem back then. Because, if you recall, you know, when you look at the 70-year captivity right here at the bottom, if you can see that, or you got one of your charts, this is when Daniel got carried away captive right here in the third, fourth year of Jehoiakim right there, which that's when Nebuchadnezzar was just taking over at that time. This is when Daniel got carried away captive. And so Daniel realizes when he comes to the end of his 70 years, he's praying in Daniel chapter 9, I know the time is right. The time is right. I've been gone for 70 years. Because that's when he started the 70 years. And this is when then they got to go back at the end of that 70 years and began building the temple. So there was a truth. That was an end of a 70-year period when Cyrus's decree came out and the Jews were allowed to go back. But the temple wasn't destroyed back here for another 20 years in Zedekiah, at the end of Zedekiah's 11th year. And so some of these Jews in this time period over here, they were looking around each other and saying, well, no wonder we have all these problems. It's the wrong time to finish the temple. We shouldn't be building it yet. The end of the 70 years from Zedekiah's last day right here, that's not the end of the 70 years yet. We're too early. And that's what they did. And they discouraged the Jews from continuing the building. There were debates in ecclesial life. Is this really the prophetic time period, or isn't it? And some of the people were discouraging the builders. So Haggai has to say, look, you know, you guys say this is the wrong time. You're wrong. This is the time to get building. We want it done by the end of that 70 years. So you also find out in verse 4 of Haggai, look what they were doing. They were paneling their own homes. And they didn't want to work on the temple. They wanted to build up their own lives. Isn't it so much more fun to stay home instead of going to a study day? And think of all the things you could have got done around your house today. And when it comes time for the seminars, and the seminars are coming up on a midweek or on a weekend or something, you think, oh, you know, do I really have time for the seminars? And think of what I could get done at home. Or think about maybe the extra time I could work during the week and make a few extra bucks. And all those kinds. This is what people were doing. The same problems that we have today. And Haggai and Zechariah are trying to stir them up and get them back into working in the ecclesia. And it was tough. It was tough to do that. But they did it. And Zechariah's night visions are part of what got them going. You find that what they were trying to do was improve their own economic situation. Can you imagine? You think about, oh, if I worked a few extra hours, or maybe I spend a little bit of overtime at home, and I get all this work done that I can like have a few thousand more dollars next year or whatever. And what God did, he says, look, you put it in your pockets, and I just put holes in the bottom of them. They just went right on through. He crashed the stock market on people that had all those investments. Oh, all that money you saved up, all gone, just like that. Interest rates down really low, all gone. You know, and we look around today. The angels are talking to us today. They're trying to get us back into working in God's house. And this is how they talk. They talk through economic situations. And Haggai has to say, didn't you notice what was going on? Didn't you realize all that extra work you did? Didn't you think that when extra people, you know, wives go out and work, we're all worried about extra money today in the family? Don't you realize I just blew it all away? All that extra work you did, I blew it all away. You didn't need to do that. What you needed to do is get involved in the ecclesia. Get involved in building God's spiritual house. That's what they should have been doing. And so Haggai comes along, and you can see that's the message he delivers. He goes right at the root of the problem. And Haggai comes along, and so he takes care of that. What we look at happened during the historical period is that a few months after the temple work was forced, God opens his door by bringing Darius to the throne. Darius Hystaspes, or Darius, whatever you call him. He brings Darius Hystaspes to the throne, and now that the real king of Persia is in power, now they have a basis to get working again. We're in the second year of Darius here in Zechariah chapter 1. And some of the Jews realized this was their opportunity. God had like opened up a little door to get things working again, and they got back to work. And so Zechariah and Haggai come along and they help them out. That was really their job. And when you look at that's the way it words it in Ezra chapter 5. It says the prophets of God helping them. This is how they got them back to work in Ezra 5. And it's the coordinated work of Zechariah and Haggai that really got all this going. Haggai comes in, and what he does is he exhorts the people. He's like the older fellow who comes in, and he lays out all the good exhortations that the people had to listen to. He was the one who like had come in and say it. You know, quit worrying about your homes. Quit worrying about your economic prosperity. Get back to working in God's house. And he was probably an older person who could come in and do that, and he gives them exhortations for that. Zechariah was probably a younger man, and Zechariah, what he does is in Zechariah 1-6, he comes in and he reminds the people, just look at the big picture for a minute. Just sit back in your families and in your homes and think about it. What's happening is that God's angels are working in your families and in your ecclesias. And they're trying as hard as they can to motivate you to get back to work in God's house. These angels are out there working for you every day, in your homes, in your families. You just can't see them. But look at the signs. And you'll see the angels all over Zechariah's prophecy. Because that's his message. You can't see it, but just stand back for a minute and look at the door that God's opened. The angels have opened up a door for you to get back to work. They've brought rest in the empire. You see that vision in chapter 1 now? Those angels on the horses when they come back, and they come back and they report and they say, we've been out all over the planet. And we come back and we brought the empire back under control and everything is resting quietly. They've been out working hard on our behalf, organizing the political events of the days to bring everything about so that we could get back to work. And that's the message Zechariah sends. You may not care, but they care a lot. And think about those angels that are out there working for you. And that's what he does. He comes in and he just keeps coming at them from all these different directions and saying, look, these people are out there, these angels, they're working for us, and they're trying to get this work done. You look at the coordinated work is how they come together. In Haggai chapter 1, he says, look, consider how you fared. Just look at your lives for a minute and think about what's been going on. Are you really that better off now than you were before 5 years ago? Has it really made that much of a difference? You know, consider what's been happening. Now the work stops. The king comes along and says, you can't build anymore. Consider how you fare. That's really what that means. Not just consider your ways, but consider what's happened in your life. You find in Haggai chapter 1 that we find that in verses 12 to 15, they finally got building again. They got working on the temple, and we're in the second year of Darius at this point. They get working on the temple again. We find in Haggai chapter 2 that you get at the end of the tabernacles that God comes in with a vision through Haggai, and he says, look, I'm going to be with you. It was right at the end of the period of the tabernacles right there, and he encourages them along. Again, in the second year of Darius, when you look at how these work together, Zechariah chapter 1, this first part of Zechariah fits in right now, in the eighth month, in the second year of Darius. And his mission at that point is, look, return to God or face captivity again. You think things are bad today? If you don't get back to working on God's house, and you don't realize what God has given you, then you may end up facing the same thing your fathers faced back 70 years ago, and don't think, I won't do it again. And that's what he reminds them of. That's the first thing Zechariah comes in with in the beginning of his prophecy. And then Haggai returns back in. This is the flip-flop between Zechariah and Haggai. And he comes in and says, look, the nation is unclean. The nation's unclean. Yes, you're unclean, but if you get your act together right now and you get back to work, I'll take care of that and I will bless you from this day forward. And you don't have to wait until you're perfectly all fixed and righteous and all that. That isn't the way it works with God. You just got to get back to working and I will bless you. And then Zechariah, the night visions fit in right at this point that God comes in the 11th month now, in the 24th day, and he says, look, if you only believe and trust me, I'll take care of all the politics, all the payment of the temple. If you only believe and trust me and get back to work in the ecclesia, I promise you I will again choose Jerusalem and finish this temple. And that's the message that Zechariah brings in at this period right now. So there's another section that we might look at tomorrow in the exhortation in Zechariah 7 and Zechariah 8. There's a little period in there. It's about 2 years later. They're in the fourth year of Darius at that point. And he comes in with this little warning to them that obedience to God is more important than all the rituals. You'll see that when we start looking at Zechariah 7. And his promise is that if you will get back to work, if you will get your lives straight and living the truth instead of just following through the rituals, then he will bring the remnant of the Jews and many nations will seek him in Jerusalem at that time. As far as Zechariah 1 goes, when you look at the outline of the chapter, what he looks at right here, we got the return to the Lord or face the captivity again in Zechariah 1, verses 1 to 6. There's the vision of the horsemen, and then we've got the promise that God gives that he will extend mercy to Jerusalem and build his house again. And then we got the vision of the four horns and the four craftsmen. But I think I'll leave it at that for right now, and we'll pick it up with the vision, we'll probably pick it up the vision of the four horsemen in class 2 and move on from there. Thank you very much.